The NFL draft is less than 2 weeks away, which means it's time for bold predictions. Is Cam Ward going to be great or a flop? We've got opposite mindsets on that. Is Shadur going to be part of a massive rise at the quarterback position, or are we going to see free falls? All that and much, much more coming at you. It's time for Inside Coverage starting right now. Welcome to Inside Coverage, where we break down the why and how of everything happening in the NFL. He's Frank Schwab. I'm Jason Fitz. Frank, we're feeling froggy this morning. Like, it's a you know, we can use alliteration. C-Rob's not here, so he can't stop me from doing it. It's a feisty Friday. It's a froggy Friday. I don't know, man. Like, I just feel like we're about to have some fun because the draft is now officially super close. Like, the draft is uncomfortably close now. And I mean that is we got some breaking news. We'll get into it in a minute. Hold on. But, like, this whole draft thing, it feels like it's snuck up on us. It feels like it's taken forever. And now, all of a sudden, I feel like it's right around the corner and we still don't have any definitive answers. This year feels weird to me.
Yeah, I did that the other day where I'm like, oh, yeah, in I think it was like 4 weeks until the draft. And somebody's like, it's actually 2 weeks until the draft. I'm like, really? Uh-oh. Now, let me ask you this. I know you are a draft nerd. I say that lovingly. Do you just came from the Final Four, which we were texting, great event in San Antonio. You had a blast. You're more excited about the draft than the Final Four, right? Like, let's be honest.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. No, like, the draft is the best event on the sports calendar.
Wow. Like, because I forgot, like, you had that take. Yeah. Number like, one. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy.
It's better than the World Series. It's better than, like, because every single team is like, every single fan base is going to feel like the sky is falling or that they've absolutely fixed their woes. Like, that's the great thing. Like, the season of hope is personified in the NFL mm-hmm. draft. So, like, mm-hmm. everybody's going to decide that their team suddenly is ready to take down the Eagles, or their team's absolute junk and everybody should be fired based on nothing that actually happens on the field. I love that version. Like, this is the ultimate soap opera for 3 days of the NFL, Frank.
It is that, absolutely. I've always said this, that if you could somehow remove the NFL draft and make it its own separate entity, the NFL draft would be the second most popular sport in America behind the NFL. Like, that's just how it is. Like, people love the draft. I've discussed my whatever about the draft. I'm not a draft nerd like you. I like it. I enjoy the spectacle.
But you will not, as Caroline Fenton says to me all the time on college football and college basketball shows, you will not yuck my yum, good sir. You cannot convince me that the draft is not a delight.
I will have a second screen on with some NBA playoff game that night. I can guarantee you that. But maybe not the first night because it's very, very busy from a workflow standpoint. But I get into it. I do. It's because there's so many moving parts, and we always make drama where there's not, let's be honest with you. Like, everything becomes drama, even in quote-unquote boring drafts. We're like, oh my God, I can't believe the Panthers took a safety with the sixth overall pick. Yeah, whatever it is. It's always a good spectacle. I'll give you that.
I'd rather watch day three of the NFL draft than a first-round NBA playoff game.
Oh, my goodness. Get
all day. Like, day three. With the guys that we've never heard of, I'd rather watch
that. It's
going
to be like Warriors-Lakers of the West, and you're going to be, like, grinding out over some fifth-round linebacker.
Yeah, tell me about it on Monday, because I'm going to be watching the draft. You're going to have to tell me what happened. I'm not going to waste my time watching that junk. I'll wait till we get to, like, the Western Conference Finals, the Eastern Conference Finals, and then I'll be like, who are these teams again? Like, that's the glory of it. Like, I don't have to pretend right now. I can just be all...
You might be the... You're not. I say this, but you're not. I was going to say, you might be the only man in America who just came from an unbelievable Final Four in San Antonio and is like, whatever, dude, give me the NFL draft. But I know there are a lot of people who would absolutely agree with
that. Yeah, let's not get it twisted. The draft is going to take the NBA playoffs behind the woodshed when it comes to ratings.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, the draft is going to be like, that's cute that you guys do this basketball thing. We're going to draft a bunch of guys based on film and underwear that we have no idea if they're going to be successful, and they may or may not be worth it, but we're going to talk about it ad nauseum for 3 days. Like, the draft has figured it out, my friend. And that's part of what we're going to do today. We're going to do bold predictions, and the best part about doing bold predictions is that if we're wrong, we're like, what do you expect? It was expected to be a bold prediction. And if we're right, we get to throw it in your faces. That is the best part of it. But before we do that, we have breaking news, Frank Schwab. We have a starting quarterback in Cleveland. I've been saying all offseason, like, the hell are the Browns going to do if they don't have a quarterback at two? And a few weeks ago, C-Rob said, well, Flacco. Well, what do we know? Now, all of a sudden, we get a deal for Flacco, $4 million deal that with incentives, and this is why I think it's key, can become $13 million. Well, $13 million is sort of like Joe Flacco starter money, right? Like $13 million is in that range where Flacco has protected himself. If they draft a quarterback, then he's still going to get paid $4 million. If he plays at all, he's going to get 13. Feels like this is a win-win for the player and for the team, and now we can continue the is Joe Flacco elite conversation.
Yeah, I mean, what other choice does Joe Flacco have right now after how he looked with the Colts last year? There's no other teams looking for Joe Flacco at this point. I guess at some point the Steelers could just be like, we're done with Aaron, just call Joe Flacco, but I don't think that was going to happen either. So a fine landing place for Flacco, where he won comeback player of the year 2 years ago. I don't know that this moves the needle too much for me, because I just, what we saw from Joe Flacco last year at the Colts was like, he had that good run 2 years ago that led him to comeback player of the year. It helped the Browns in the playoffs, obviously. Played well, too. And maybe he could replicate that back with Stefanski. I doubt it, honestly. I just think that was lightning in a bottle. Good luck doing that again. So I don't even, like you said, yeah, the Browns found a starter. Maybe. I don't know. Like, I don't know that he can necessarily beat out Kenny Pickett. I'll be honest with you. Like, Yeah, we're already getting bold predictions, right? Like, I just, what's the upside to Joe Flacco now? We'll see. Well, again, I'm just so stuck with what we saw with the Colts last year, where it was like, okay, now Joe Flacco comes in to save this offense from Anthony Richardson, and you're like, oh, Joe Flacco ain't any better. And you have to put Anthony Richardson right back in the lineup. So it's less to me about Flacco, right? It's more to me about everything else all of the things that come along with the Browns signing Joe Flacco right now. It means they're probably out on another veteran. We had all been like, all right, that's a Kirk Cousins team, right? Like, the Browns are going to get Kirk Cousins eventually. I don't think it's – Jory has talked about this, and she kind of enlightened me on it and brought me over to this side of, why would the Falcons trade Kirk Cousins right now? He's already paid for. Like, you need a backup quarterback. Michael Penix does have an injury history. The Falcons aren't just giving away Kirk Cousins, and I've come around to that, and now I'm convinced. Like, there's no real landing spot for Kirk Cousins unless we get into September, somebody gets hurt, really, really desperate, overpays for Kirk Cousins in a trade. Maybe the Falcons consider that. But this just leads me to believe Kirk Cousins ain't going anywhere. I guess the Steelers' option is still out there with Aaron Rodgers, whatever's going to happen if he does ghost them at the end of this whole thing. But I just think Cousins is off the table for the Browns now, right? And I think the second pick at quarterback is obviously off the table. I think we all kind of knew that, reading the tea leaves. Travis Hunter's gaining a lot of steam with the number two pick and people projecting that. I think this just locks it in. Like, the Browns are done at quarterback. Like, this is it. They're going into the season with Flacco, Pickett backing him up. I get too excited about that. Maybe they draft somebody second, third, fourth round to develop, but I don't think they're chasing another veteran, and I don't think they're drafting a guy number two. I think that's pretty obvious with this move.
Yeah, no, look, I've been sort of standing on the Kirk Cousins isn't going anywhere mountain for a minute. And I think that's pretty clear. Like, it doesn't matter what we all think. You know, Arthur Blank doesn't want to let him go. So that's just facts. Now, I will push back on one thing, because, look, these are just numbers, and numbers in a vacuum don't really have the eye test. I get it. But with the Browns, Joe Flacco completed 60% of his passes for 1,600 yards, 13 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. With the Colts, 65%. 1,700 yards, 12 and 7. His passer rating was higher with the Colts than it was with the Browns.
Really?
And all of those numbers I just gave you, like the Kenny Pickett's best year, his rookie year, or his second year if you want to take it by quarterback rating, 62% completion, 2,070 yards, 6 touchdowns, 4 picks, and an 81 passer rating. Like, I don't know that Kenny Pickett is better than a 40-year-old Joe Flacco. That's how little I believe in Kenny Pickett. So, like, this is just, if you're looking around, you're like, man, our options are Kenny Pickett or Joe Flacco. I don't think you can say they're out of the quarterback market, but I do think that that makes it pretty clear that I'd be surprised if they went quarterback at 2. If they had somebody they loved at 2, we could make the argument that they're doing what the Giants did, right? Like, Kenny Pickett's really the backup and Joe Flacco's going to be the coach in the room for him. Like, you know, we've said that Jameis Winston is the coach in the room and Russell Wilson's the actual backup. Maybe that's their plan, but man, you want to talk, I pray to God that the Browns don't draft Shadur. Because if you're telling me that they're going to put a quarterback room together that's Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, and Shadur Sanders, what part of that am I supposed to feel good for Shadur about? Like, I want these kids to go into opportunities to succeed. Flacco has never in his career really turned around and been like, I want to be a tremendous mentor. Like, that is not who he is, right? And there's nobody in that room that's going to push Shadur. So man, I hate that for Shador. Like, I hope this takes the Browns out of the quarterback market in the first round. Maybe in the second round, they take a flyer on somebody they want to develop slow and low. But, man, if your options are Kenny Pickett or a 40-year-old Joe Flacco at this point, you are screwed in the division they're in, in the conference they're in. Like, congratulations, Browns fans. You just found out what the ceiling is. And the ceiling is Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett, which means the ceiling is just, it's a ceiling of suck.
And I'm sure every Browns fan is going to, the optimistic ones are going to be like, we went 11-6 with Joe Flacco 2 years ago. Why can't we do it again? Good luck. That's all I'll say about that.
But man, you're right 2 years is a long time when you're old, too. Like,
yeah,
look,
yeah, there's right, a 2 years is a long 30, time. 38, 40, yeah. Flacco, I mean, 40-year, the history, I'll repeat this a million times. The history of 40-year-old quarterbacks is absolutely positively terrible. There's basically been one guy to play well into his 40s. There's been a couple decent seasons at age 40, Favre, Warren, Moon. But once you get to this point, it's a wasteland, except for Tom Brady, who's just a freak who could probably roll out of bed tomorrow and throw 35 touchdowns for the Buccaneers if he wanted to, right? But other than Tom Brady, everybody else falls off a cliff. I assume Joe Flacco is going to fall off a cliff. I do, like, yeah, the Browns want to draft Quinn Ewers in the third round or whatever they're going to do. Like, I'm fine with that, but I don't know that that bears a lot of fruit many times. But yeah, I just think if you're you just feel like, oh, okay, we got Flacco. What did we do 2 years ago? But realistically, you're sitting there saying, this is it. Like, how are we going to compete with Lamar and Burrow? And it's tough. It's tough when you don't have a quarterback. And this is the fallout from Deshaun Watson. It really is. Like, this is just, you screwed up that move at quarterback so badly that it sets your franchise back to the point where your top two options at quarterback are Kenny Pickett and a 40-year-old Joe Flacco.
Yeah, and by the way, Browns fans that are about to at me and be like, oh, up yours, you don't believe in our quarterbacks, we're going to be just fine. That's the same group of fans that added me when I said I didn't like the Deshaun Watson acquisition and told me that I was a dumbass then. So, like, maybe.
Did you not like that at the time?
No.
You didn't like it?
No. I didn't like it at the time. I didn't like anything about it.
I can't lie to you. I can't sit here and tell you, like, a fairy tale that I was like, oh, no, Deshaun Watson with Houston was awesome. Like, he was. That's why I've kept the light. That's why I was so wrong about the Browns last year. I'll own it. Like, I was high on the Browns last year until I saw Deshaun Watson in preseason and all the nonsense that was going on with him. He wasn't really playing and he didn't look good in camp. And I'm like, okay, I got to back off of this. But if you remember for the summer, I was like, the Browns are loaded. They can't do this because Deshaun Watson's going to bounce back. I was even keeping the light on for him until last year. I didn't hate the move at the time. I can't lie. It was a lot. It was a lot in money. It was a lot in picks, but I just kept, because Deshaun Watson was so great at Clemson, so great with the Texans, and there was just no historical comp for him falling off the planet like he did. Like, there really is.
Yeah,
if you look,
and look, man, I'm not going to say that I'm not going to say that I sat here and predicted that he would just never reach the pinnacle. My whole thing was, from the outset of the acquisition, what level of greatness would they have to attain to make it worth it? That's always my, like, okay, what's your cost acquisition theory? So, like, I kept looking around and thinking, okay, what do the Browns actually have to win to make the egg on their face for this transaction and the risk of a fully guaranteed contract worth it? I can't find a way to make that path. And Browns fans continually just told me I was a moron that knew nothing. And so I'm just, you know, like, this is one of those moments, Browns fans, where just, like, sit on your hands for a minute. If you're right, you know, if your organization turns out to be right about Flacco, or if they take Shador or whatever they do, like, wait until you see it and then celebrate it. Like, start to approach your offseason the way that you've learned to approach your regular season games. Because Browns fans know you don't talk trash until it's zeros on the clock. Like, as a Raiders fan, I don't talk trash with a minute left up by three touchdowns, because you never know, right? Like, so just approach your offseason the same way. Just stop talking until you actually have something to talk about. That's just, you know, my fiery message. All right, you ready for some bold predictions? Are you ready to
when
to
am
like
I
get
not
really
ready
weird
for some bold predictions? You can ask me that. You can call me up at 3 a.m. In May, mid-May, and be like, you want to do some bold predictions? I'd be like, all right, I'll get up. Come on, let's go.
Well, I teased it too soon. We'll take a quick break. Then we'll get you your bold predictions. I promise. Bold predictions for the NFL draft. You will not want to miss coming up next. Let's get weird, buddy. I can't, you know, usually when I say that to you, we're in a casino somewhere and it's a shot and a drink and we're headed over to the craps table. However, let's get weird today means let's get weird with some bold predictions. I think shot and a drink and craps are more fun, but, you know, we've got plenty of time for that. All right. Let's stick with quarterbacks for a second. All right. Here's the question. How many quarterbacks will go in round one? Your bold prediction, good sir.
It's my the first part of this is not bold. The second part might be, I think two quarterbacks go in the first round, but Shedeur Sanders doesn't. I think that, look, ooh, we've talked about this. Oh, like, obviously, Cam's going spicy. Number one. We all know that. I'm not getting too bold over here, right? Cam's going number one. I think that, look, Shedeur Sanders isn't going to be every team's flavor. What have we heard over and over and over, especially Jory Charles talking about this, that the grades just are wildly fluctuating on Shedeur Sanders, fourth round kind of grades on him. If the teams that need a quarterback, the Saints, the Steelers, whoever, don't love Shedeur Sanders and they're not going to play their hand right now, maybe they love Jackson Dart a little bit more. And I think we could get to a point. You do this. Look, I've been all about Shedeur to the Saints, and now the betting odds have reflected that. Unfortunately, I didn't get a lot of value out of that, Fitz, but whatever. But I also realize that what if the Saints are just like, we don't love Shedeur Sanders for reasons X, Y, and Z. He's maxed out physically. Maybe they don't like his attitude. Like that might be a real thing and not just a dumb, like we're letting anonymous scouts rip a 21-year-old guy. Maybe they just don't like his vibe, but they do like Jackson Dart and they need a quarterback. I could see it. I could see it. And maybe because if you get past, if Shedeur Sanders slips past the Saints, all of a sudden you start doing this game of, well, who's going to draft him? Like you start going team by team by team. Yes, the Steelers, maybe, but what if the Steelers don't like him? We don't know. Like, there's probably, if we say half the NFL teams like Shedeur Sanders well enough, half of them are like, fourth round grade. Okay, what if the Steelers are in that group that doesn't like him? And you start going team by team, and it's just hard to find a landing spot for Shedeur Sanders if he slips by the Saints and the Steelers. If one of those teams just is higher on Jackson Dart, well, all right, all of a sudden we're sitting here and Shedeur Sanders is the top remaining player left. When we all write those stories on Thursday night, I could see it happening. I don't, again, it's bold. I'm not exactly actioning this in any way that I think Shedeur Sanders is dropping a second round, but you can see a path for it if one of those few teams that really, really is looking for a quarterback in the first round just likes Jackson Dart a little bit more.
Especially once you get to pick, let's say, 14. And, you know, y'all, I'll just read this off for you. Indianapolis. Okay, so let's say Indianapolis is still questionable. After that, pick 15. Atlanta has their quarterback. Oh. Arizona has financially committed to their quarterback. Yep. Cincinnati has their quarterback. Seattle has financially committed to, I think, a quarterback. You know, Tampa Bay has their quarterback. Denver has their quarterback. Yeah. Then you have Pittsburgh, who doesn't. That's one. The Chargers have their quarterback. Green Bay, Minnesota, Houston. The Rams, maybe, so that's two.
Maybe.
Baltimore, Detroit, Washington, Buffalo, Kansas City, Philadelphia. Right. In the back half of the draft, there are only two teams that are even in the market in our minds for a quarterback right now. That's sort of unprecedented, right? So that I can see where some of this comes in, but I'm going to go the opposite direction in my bold prediction, okay? Because I'm going to go with the bold prediction that four quarterbacks are taken in the first round. Four. Spicy number of four, okay? Because Cam Ward's one.
Yeah,
I still think somewhere in this equation, Shedeur goes. All right, that's just,
No. We're going bold here. I want specifics. Where's Shedeur going? Where are these two mystery quarterbacks after that going? Come on, let's get specific. Tennessee, I want to know.
Tennessee goes Cam Ward at one.
Yeah,
that we all know that. New Orleans, I think there's something to Jackson Dart at nine. I keep hearing too much about people like it. Kellamore likes Jackson Dart.
Can you imagine the moment where Goodell is up there saying, the New Orleans Saints draft quarterback, Jackson Dart? Like, oh my goodness, everybody freak out. Everybody would freak out.
So then I got Shedeur, and I could see, as controversial as this is, I could see Miami at least looking around, trying to figure out what their health situation is. I can see Indianapolis, but I particularly I think Pittsburgh is going to be so hosed that they reach a quarterback. So that gets me to Shedeur. So now I just listed all those teams at the rest of the draft that aren't in the quarterback market. Here's where it gets spicy. All right. The Browns have the second pick the Browns have the first pick in the second round, right? Keep looking through the draft order. At the top of the second round, you have the Browns, who won't have selected a quarterback. The Giants, who won't have selected a quarterback. I don't think the Raiders are in the quarterback market anymore, but maybe developmentally they are. The Jets are not wildly committed to Justin Fields in a way that would prevent them from using a second round pick. Like, I think there are four or five teams picking early enough in the second round that someone will trade up to get ahead of them. If you believe that Cleveland is going to sit there all night, get to pick their best quarterback the next day, So, and look, I hear everybody when they say Jalen Milroe's accuracy isn't good enough. He's not a good enough thrower of the ball. Okay, neither was, I know it's the outlier, neither was Josh Allen, right? Like, so how does Jalen Milroe become successful? Well, you draft inarguably the best athlete of all the quarterbacks in this year's draft, and you slow and low him for the next 2 years with a coach that can develop him. So now all of a sudden I'm looking around and I'm thinking, well, if I'm the Giants, do I want to get ahead of the Browns for that? Yes, if I haven't picked my quarterback. If I'm the Raiders and I am taking a developmental quarterback, is it worth moving back into the bottom of the first round? Yes. For the Jets, certainly. So if for some reason the Saints don't get their quarterback in the first round, they're a big move-up sort of team for me. So I think there's enough juice at the top of the second round that somebody will move back in just the way they did for Lamar Jackson. And at the end of the first round, you're going to see Jalen Milroe taken. And I don't think it's because somebody's taking him to put him on the field. I think somebody's they're drafting the physical attributes and saying, I can teach this kid to be a quarterback.
Interesting. Where are you? I know you think that's how the draft is going to play out. Let's take Cam's separate. The next three quarterbacks, do you think these guys are going to be Pro Bowl level guys, just mid-tier kind of guys? You think they're going to be bad quarterbacks? Like, where are you on those other three guys?
That is...
Because I like Shador. I like Shador more than most. I think he's a tough dude. And he's accurate. I think he's lifted two separate programs at Jackson State and Colorado. I like Shador. I think he's going to be a good player. I really do. Like, I maybe I'm just biased because I live here in Colorado and I've been exposed to him a lot. But I like Shador. I don't know about the other two guys, to be honest. I think Milroe's got a long way to go. Physically, yes, he is very gifted. So a team with that plan of 2 years slow, low and slow, yeah, that might work. I'm not really in on Dart or Milroe, though. Are you?
I'm in on Dart. I think there's a lot still left to teach Dart. I think, you know, the concepts that Lane Kiffin run make quarterback life pretty easy, which is something we've seen out of Tennessee prospects drafted at the quarterback position also, right? Like certain college offenses just let you sling it, right? And then you've got to teach them to do more than that. So I think it's going to take a little bit of work. That's why I actually don't mind if it was somebody like Kellen Moore that can teach the nuance of the quarterback position specifically while Derek Carr is out here, you know, winning you just enough games to stay somewhat relevant. So I think I like some of these guys, but look, if I break quarterbacks, I like to break quarterbacks down into thirds. So we always say, well, this guy's a top 10 quarterback. I think that's a phrase, not an actuality. So we're not sitting here saying, okay, I've thought in my mind of the top 10 quarterbacks and I've listed them out and this guy's on that list. We're just saying this guy feels like he's sort of top 10 in the league. I look at it at thirds, top third, middle third, bottom third. If you have a bottom third quarterback, you're screwed. If you have a top third quarterback, you don't move off your top third. Now, when you get to that middle third, where are you? Because if you're upper middle class in that middle third, then you're in a pretty good situation. Like, I think
Jared Goff, you're a pretty good spot with Jared Goff. You feel pretty, but you wouldn't say he's top 10. Like, I don't think I would, but you know.
I think Geno's in the same category. Like, Geno in the right system, he's the top middle class of that, right? Like, those guys make sense to me. I kind of feel like, look, they're not gonna single-handedly Herculean win you a bunch of football games, but in the right systems, with the right situations, with the right coaches, you can go to the playoffs with them. That's where I think the ceiling is for most of this class. Like, I think the ceiling for Cam Ward is an upper middle class quarterback. I think the ceiling for Shador is sort of a middle of the pack quarterback. And so I'd say the same for Jackson. And the one that's interesting to me because of his physical attributes, Jalen, I think is interesting. Like, he's going to be tough to defend, but also we've seen that if you can't learn how to throw the football on schedule, like if you can't make the necessary throws, you will never be great. So like, I think there's at least a glimmer of hope for the Quinn Ewers of the world and guys like that. That's part of the reason that everybody keeps telling me Tyler Shuck is, you know, he's this great prospect. Like, his tape looks better than everybody else. But Shuck's like 26 years old.
Yeah, I think
so. In my theory of I need 2 years for any of these guys to really be the best they can be, in my theory, I'm out on Shuck because at best case, he's hitting the field for me for the first time when he's 28 or 29. Like, I don't love that situation. I got one real contract out of him before I'm worried about his age. Like, so I think of the quarterbacks we've mentioned, I'm in on the developmental prospect of Jalen Milroe if he goes to the right place. If he goes to the wrong place, he's out of the league in 2 years. If he goes to the right place, he's Jordan Love to me, and he's starting and he's effective, but he gets 3 years to get to do it.
Interesting. I can see it. I can see it. Again, situation is so important. I'm kind of in agreement with you on that's kind of my four that I keep. Shuck, I guess. I just think that you're getting a guy. I mean, it happened with Bo Nix, I guess. But Bo Nix was a much better prospect. you're just getting a guy who this is what he is. Like, this is, you almost, if you draft him at his age, you almost have to play him right away. Like, this is out of the box. Like, this is who he is. I don't think there's another level he can go to. So I'm kind of out on him. There's nobody down the board who I'm like, yeah, I think that guy's going to be a pretty good NFL starter. I just don't have that feeling about anybody else in this class.
Yeah. I'll say it again too. How many times have I said this to you since the beginning of last football season? I've been saying the same thing. The best thing you could do in this year's quarterback class is sit it out. Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I agree. Realistically, look at the Giants. Everybody keeps asking, what are the Giants going to do at three? Are they going to take a quarterback? Well, if this was Daboll's first year, I love it. Like, yeah, if this was one of those situations where, hey, we trust Daboll. He's going to develop him just like he did with Josh Allen. We're going to give Daboll the next 3 or 4 years. This quarterback's going to come along the right way. Oh, I love that. Great. You have proof of concept. But this is probably a one and done for Daboll and Joe Shane, which means then your next regime is going to come in and that may or may not be their quarterback. And now you're into the BS that kills a quarterback, right? So, like, it's ironic to me that the teams picking at the top of the draft, as you and I've discussed, are all teams that should be able to maximize the quarterback position. And I don't trust most of them.
No, that's totally fair. I completely agree with everything you said. It's tough, though, when you're the Giants. You're like, okay, well, yeah, sitting out the quarterback class probably makes sense, but we need to sell some hope at the end of the year to save our jobs, maybe. And is Russell Wilson going to get us enough wins to, I don't know. It's all about self-preservation right now with a lot of these teams you've just mentioned.
I mean, think about what you just said. I know we'll move on here, but think about this, Frank. If the Giants, let's say, stay at three and they draft Shador, just as an example.
Which I don't think they will, but yeah.
No, but in 2 weeks, if the Giants do a giant fan meet and greet downtown in New York to meet your new starting quarterback, and it's Shador, that line is going to be down the street, around the corner. Fair. Like, it's going to be everywhere. If tomorrow they did a meet your Giants starting quarterbacks meet and greet, and they put Jameis and Russ in the room, what, like 30 people? And that includes the 5 people that are the handlers for the athletes that are there. Like, you're right. Like, it's, if you're trying to sell sex in New York, you ain't selling it with Russ and Jameis. Like, at the end of the day, that is not, there's nobody that's flocking to that premiere.
No. Yeah. That's not a Broadway. That's far off Broadway. Yeah.
Off. That's the play your friend requires you to come to. Like, your friend's trying to be an actor. Nobody's had the heart to tell him yet that he can't make it. That's it. What it is. All right. So let's get to another position that we've talked a lot about because of Travis Hunter. Okay. The first receiver off the board after Travis. Let's start here. You and I both agree Travis Hunter will be gone in the first 3 picks, correct?
Second pick. Yeah. That's what I'm I'm convinced the Browns are going to take Hunter by this point. Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you this. How concerned are you, scale of 1 to 10, on the fact that Abdul Carter has whatever this foot issue has, and foot issues with pass rushers can be
right,
a big deal?
I'm low on the scale. I'm not too worried about it. I think 3, like, yeah, you're right, foot injuries could linger, but I don't, maybe it's just because of the glowing reports coming out, which of course are all agent driven and whatever. Like, he's not gonna be like, oh, facts, God, this is a big problem. But I'm maybe buying into that. I'm not very worried about it. Are you?
I feel like if it wasn't an issue at all, we would be hearing more rise in the buzz for him. Like, it's such a premier position, and he's such a dominant player last year. I'm like at a 6 in my level of concern.
Wow.
I don't think you can justify a fall for him in my mind, but my God, like, it feels like right now is when we should hear more momentum for Abdul Carter, and we don't. So I'm with you. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd say, well, I would take Abdul Carter over Travis Hunter at the 2nd overall pick. I'd make my strength even stronger, and I would absolutely just annihilate the quarterbacks that are against me. That makes a lot of sense. But if there's any fear at all, then I think you have to go Travis Hunter. And, you know, frankly, if you're getting somebody that can help you in 2 ways, then I see the bonus on that. So, yeah, I think I'm with you right now. Travis Hunter to 2 overall. I think I just want the 80s tag team sizzle of the Road Warriors. Like, I want Miles Garrett.
Hawk and Animal. And,
yeah. You know what I want? Like, that's what I want. Like, I want Hawk and Animal. I want Miles Garrett standing next to Abdul Carter, just scaring the snot out of quarterbacks for the next 10 years.
My only pushback to that, and if you look at who's the special player in this draft, it could be Abdul Carter. Look, I mean, he's a great pass rusher. He's awesome in college. But who's the one guy who we've never seen anything like him? And it's Travis Hunter. Like, we've never seen. Again, I'm blown away by the fact that a dude can show up at a combine and be like, yep, I'm the number one receiver in this class. You know what else? I'm the number one cornerback in this class, too. Like, what? Like, that's ridiculous, but that's Travis Hunter this year. So I think you're looking at a guy who, again, if you have a plan to play him, maybe not start him both ways, like Dion told our colleague Charles McDonald, but play him both ways. Like, the comps for him at receiver are like Chad Johnson. The comps for him at cornerback are Champ Bailey. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, we've never seen a guy like this. That's why I go Travis Hunter. I just think he's unlike anything we've seen before.
Okay, so then who's the next wide receiver off the board?
I need some help here, Fitz. I do, because we've been calling him Tet McMillan, right? Like,
yeah.
And now he doesn't like that. He came out. He said, that's not my name. I go by T-Mac, or it's not Tet, though. You pronounce this Teteria? Is that it?
Yeah, Teteria McMillan, Teteria, which is why we Teteria. All call him Tet, because it's a
that's why we all call him Tet. I've never called him anything else, but now I'm like, that's rude to the guy to just keep calling him that because I can't really pronounce his name. I've never tried to pronounce Giannis's last name, by the way, because I'm terrible at it. Yeah, I just call him Giannis or Greek Freak or whatever.
I was at the college football national championship game covering it that year that Tua was put into the half. At the time, I was still especially so new to some of these pronunciations. My phone blew up at halftime from all of the bosses in college football, and none of them were being like, because I was actually covering Kendrick Lamar did a halftime show. So I had to leave the game, go to the halftime show to cover that, and then come back to the game. And all of the things that I were getting were voice memos from people that were like, Tungavaloa, Tungavaloa, learn how to say Tungavaloa. Because we knew in the postgame we were going to have to talk a lot about Tua Tungavaloa. So I feel it. Like, I learned that. And so, yeah, it's the same with, you know, McMillan. We'll just go with T-Mac.
T-Mac, that's fine. T-Mac to me is Tracy McGrady, but that's fine, whatever. We had a different LT after a while. So whatever. But as polite as I've been to T-Mac here, I'm going to be impolite to him and say, I don't think he's the first receiver off the board, non-Travis Hunter edition, right? Because I just think that the difference in his 40 time and Matthew Golden's 40 time is going to change just the speed, not necessarily just the 40, but just the speed element. I don't think T-Mac has that necessarily. I think teams are going to get a little googly-eyed over Matthew Golden's upside, his speed, his game-breaking ability. I think Matthew Golden goes ahead of T-Mac. I think most people have had a consensus of T-Mac being the number one receiver off the board after Travis Hunter. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be Matthew Golden. I think that he's going to be one of those guys who we're sitting there in the top 10 and going, whoa, Matthew Golden went that high? Ooh, wow, that's spicy. I think Matthew Golden's the first receiver off the board after T-Mac.
I think organizations are going to tell on themselves if they draft McMillan. And by that, I mean, he said pretty loudly in an interview he was doing that he doesn't necessarily love football, doesn't love watching it, doesn't watch a lot of film.
Yeah, that was weird.
I mean, I've seen former players say, hey, this isn't a big deal. Like, you watch film with your teammates at the facility, blah, 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 blah. But what is the cliche we hear all the time, especially from new regimes? We're looking for guys that love the game. They love football. They live, eat, and breathe it. I don't know how you can go on a public interview while you're eating your cereal and sit there and say, yeah, I don't really like watching football. And when the interviewer says, does that make it tough to watch film? And your answer is, yeah, I don't really watch a lot of film. That's just a tough look for any organization that says they want somebody that loves football. And that I do think when you're talking about how close those two wide receivers are, particularly in the pre-draft analysis, I'm buying it. I could buy that given with the 40 time could be enough to make him go above him. And I don't think, by the way, like, I think we're much more likely to see a run on these receivers in the second round than we are in the first. Like, they're just, it seems like people are sort of on Jaden Higgins, the kid out of Iowa State. People are in like, not in love. Emeka Abuka, who we all watched dominate at Ohio State. And I really thought Abuka would, in the scouting process, would rise. And instead, it just feels like, I don't know if we're used to what he does or if it just doesn't flash the same way for scouts.
Here's what I think, and I was going to mention this. I think maybe that's everybody being quiet about him because nobody wants to let the cat out of the bag. I think that maybe the smokescreen is saying nothing about Abuka. I just think that he's one of those guys who comes off anyway publicly as a grinder, as a guy who loves football, as a guy who is just going to be immensely like reliable for you. And I think that if there's a team that's turned off by T-Mac's, like, I don't really like football, I don't know how much that affected anybody, but if that's come across in his pre-draft interviews and stuff, I could see there being teams that are like, let's just go with Ibuka. He's a grinder. Like, he's, you know what you're getting out of him. He's been incredible. He comes from a receiver football factory in Ohio State. I wonder if the opposite is true, and all the kind of quietness about him is just that teams don't want to say anything because they all want to keep the secret to themselves.
That's fair. I mean, he always flashes a big target, runs really good routes. Like,
good, solid. He's solid as it comes, right? Like, you know what you're getting.
100%. Like, he's as much a safety net for a quarterback as he is an explosive player. So, like, I'm just surprised he hasn't sort of catapulted up. Maybe you're right. Maybe and this feels like one of those moments.
I can see him going ahead of T-Mac. I could. Like, it's a little bold, I guess. But, yeah, I could see T-Mac falling just a little bit because not just the – I don't know what to even make of the interview, like we've all seen. But just kind of – I don't love contested catch guys in the NFL. I think you need to get some separation. It's hard to win that way. There's some Des Bryants out there who make their entire living off being contested catch guys, but it ain't easy. Like, I like a guy who could be Malik Nabers. You know, he's a freak, but they get open whenever you want. I don't know that T-Mac is that guy necessarily.
Yeah, this year's wide receiver class isn't that same. But look, I could totally see a team late in the first round, like for Emeka particularly, a team, you know, that takes a lot of stabs at the position, like the Ravens, Rams. I could see somebody.
Ravens are a fun fit. Yeah, that's a really fun fit. Yeah,
It just makes too much sense for me. Speaking of fun fits, and we're not talking about me. Ashton Jeanty lands where? Good sir.
All right, everybody's got him to your Raiders, right? You'd be excited about that, I think. Yeah. Everybody is like, well, the backup plan is the Bears, because why would the Bears pass on him? I think the Raiders, look, I look at it this way. The Raiders are so far away, they're not a running back away, and I don't know that they have the offensive line necessarily to even help Ashton Jeanty, right? Like, this, I don't know. I don't love that fit. And then I wonder about the Bears just being like, we can get a running back in the second round. There's so many running backs. So what happens after that? Ashton Jeanty to the Dallas Cowboys at number 12. And immediately, Jerry Jones sells like 70 billion jerseys on draft night, right? Like, this would be the fit of the entire draft where we would all be like, wow, this is fun. Let's go. I've talked before. I talked to Matt Harmon on the fantasy show. I had a great time with him and talked about the Cowboys and said, I think we're kind of sleeping on the Cowboys' rebound possibilities here, but they need playmakers. They need somebody other than CeeDee Lamb to give some juice to their offense. Well, you put Jeanty in that offense with CeeDee Lamb at receiver. All of a sudden, this was an offense that supported Rico Dowdle getting 1,000 yards. What can Jeanty do? I love it. I'm almost wish casting this, that I want Jeanty to the Cowboys just because I think it would be fun. It would be awesome. I'm sorry your Raiders would pass. I think the Bears fans would be really, really mad that they would pass on Jeanty. But I think the depth of this running back class might get some teams saying, we can wait. We can get a guy in the second round. There's a lot of guys in the second round we can take a stab on. We don't need to take one number six, number 10. But I think the Cowboys would be like, heck yeah, we're getting our war daddy at running back, as Jerry Jones would say. I like Jeanty to the Cowboys so much. And we would just write about this every day too. Like, if we talk about the Cowboys way too much as an NFL media community. Oh my goodness, if Jeanty goes there, whew, oh man, that would be fun.
I think you'd have to keep an eye on, honestly, to get Jeanty, I think the Cowboys would have to move up. And I'm not saying that they wouldn't move up. Like, I think you'd have to keep an eye on getting ahead of the Bears to do that. The Raiders part of this becomes interesting because Ashton Jeanty is a perfect fit for an offense that's going to want to run the football. I don't deny that at all. What I do think is, particularly look at where they want to make their strength stronger. So if for some reason Abdul Carter does fall to sixth, I don't think that'll ever happen. That would be really enticing for the Raiders to pair with Max Crosby.
Pick that at six. Yeah,
100%. Mason Graham, the tackle out of Michigan, I think is sort of the same thing. Like, you're making your defensive line better in a division where you take on Mahomes. Now the Raiders also have a glaring need at corner. It feels like that's too early for Will Johnson. So widely regarded as the top corner. So Ashton Jeanty makes a ton of sense. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, Ashton Jeanty to the Raiders is being speculated because it makes sense. Ashton Jeanty to the Bears is being speculated because, my God, it makes sense. Make Caleb Williams' life easier and give Ben Johnson a toy like he's had in Detroit to play with. So I think, I'm with you, I actually love the fit of Ashton Jeanty to the Cowboys. Amarian Hampton is somebody I think also is still very good, still great. but Ashton is special. So if the Cowboys can go up and get Ashton Jeanty, I actually kind of like that. Like,
move ahead of the Bears. Go be aggressive. They probably have to move ahead of the Bears. I mean, if this is bold, I think at the end of the day, I don't think the Bears would really pass just because of Ben Johnson's history, like you said. But yeah, the Cowboys are like, this is the best dude in the draft other than the top two, regardless of position. Let's go up to number 9. Why not? The Saints will drop down with us. Why not? Whoever. Yeah.
Well, the Saints, I think the Saints like that. I think the Saints are in the quarterback market. So they're going to have to go up to 6, 7, or 8 to get him, I think.
Yeah.
So, and look, that's also where, again, go back and watch what Pete Carroll did with Seattle. Pete Carroll and Seattle love to trade down, and they weren't afraid to take running backs in the first round. If the Cowboys really love Ashton Jeanty, this is one of those Jerry Jones, Mark Davis have a good relationship. There's a phone call and the Cowboys move up to 6 to take him. The Raiders move down to 12, pick up additional assets to do it. Like, actually kind of makes sense for everybody involved. I think Ashton Jeanty would have a more meaningful, immediate impact to his career by being in Dallas than he would by being in Vegas, for sure. I mean, to your point, they're not ready to take advantage of what a great running back can
give
them.
I just don't think the Raiders are running back away. I look at that, and I think you'd agree with me. I think the Cowboys can look at it like, hey, we won 12 games 3 years in a row. Yeah, we had a down year, but we were even still competitive in this terrible, terrible year. What if we add our, you know, I mean, I'm sure Jerry's Jerry. He remembers Emmitt Smith. He remembers the first few years of Ezekiel Elliott. When he's had a great running back, that's been mostly their best teams. I don't think he's forgotten that.
No, the more you say it, the more I like the Cowboys. I like the Cowboys trading up to do this. I think that's a great thing. And then, not for nothing, again, if they trade to 6, the Raiders are then in a better spot, you know, for if they want to draft Will Johnson or if they want to take one of the other running backs. Like,
agreed.
That's fine. It'll be really, I think that's where things get really interesting because the Raiders, the Bears, and the Cowboys are all prime spots that could go Ashton Jeanty. So how much are teams willing to give up to get there? Okay, we've done all this conversation. We haven't even talked about the first pick in the draft, but we've got some bold takes on that. We'll do that after a quick break. Welcome back, Frank. I don't remember the last time a first overall pick was just forgotten. Like, we spent so much time talking about the second pick. Like, for anyone that doesn't know, the Tennessee Titans have the first overall pick, and they're going to select a quarterback, Cam Ward. Like, I just feel like we don't even talk about this. So let's get a little bold takery on Cam and the Titans. What you got?
The more I've gone about this draft process, the more I've listened to people I really trust and respect, I'm kind of in on Cam Ward being really, really good. Like, not maybe to the Stroud, Jaden Daniels level, but not as far off as everybody thinks. What I think has hurt Cam Ward is a couple things. He kind of came out of nowhere. We don't like that. We like, this guy was a star in high school and a great recruit, and we've known him from day one, like Trevor Lawrence. He didn't do that. He went to Incarnate Word because he ran the wing T in high school, right? But he kind of, I almost like that he worked his way up. He knows what it's like to face adversity. He knows what it's like to come from the bottom and make it to the top. I like all of his physical skills. I think what's really hurt him is this perception that we've had early on, oh, this quarterback draft class stinks. Like, this quarterback, he just got lumped in with that when I think he's the outlier. Look at what the Tennessee Titans did this offseason. Yeah, they've kind of played this dog and pony show. We don't know what we're going to do with the number one pick. If you look at what their actions were, they've never done a single thing this offseason that's given us any reason to believe that they're doing anything with the first pick but drafting Cam Ward and being very happy about it. They didn't even look at any of the veteran quarterbacks, right? Like, there's never been a doubt that the Titans are drafting Cam Ward number one, really, when you think about it. I think they're sold on this guy, and I'm kind of sold on him too. I think he's going to be not only rookie of the year, unless Jeanty goes to like somebody like the Bears and rushes for 1,800 yards or the Cowboys and rushes, that could happen. I think Cam Ward's going to be rookie of the year. I think he can't save that Titans team, I don't think, but I didn't think that way about the Texans 2 years ago or the Commanders. I did think that way about the Commanders last year. Don't forget that, Fitz. But I just think that Cam Ward's going to be far better than we think. We're like, hey, Cam Ward, okay, maybe. No, I think he's going to be one of those guys. You talked about first tier, second tier, third tier. I think he could be a first tier guy. I think we're just forgetting about him because, honestly, sorry, Titans fans, the Titans are one of these kind of forgotten about franchises a lot. So we're not going to talk about the Titans a lot because they don't drive a lot of attention. We've gotten involved with this whole, like, this quarterback draft class stinks, so Cam Ward must stink too. I just think he's the outlier. I think Cam Ward's going to be really, really good, much better than we expect, much better out of the gate than we expect. I like Cam Ward. Again, I think he's a first-tier quarterback. I think he will be that at sooner rather than later in the NFL.
You've lost your mind. Look, I want Cam to be good, but my hot take, my bold prediction is actually the exact opposite. Like, I think the Titans are going to ruin the kid. I mean, look at him.
That is a worry. That's a worry. I can't.
I mean, for me, like the most, oh my God, can't miss prospect we've seen in a long time in the draft was Trevor Lawrence. And I said when he was drafted that the Jags would ruin Trevor Lawrence or would fail Trevor Lawrence before Trevor Lawrence failed the Jags. And that's exactly what they did. Like, what proof do we have that Brian Callahan is at all capable of putting together a competent team as a head coach? The answer is none. And in fact, go all the way to the top of the Titans organization from an ownership standpoint. You know, they had Vrabel, then they bring in a GM that, you know, there was a, at one point, John Robinson trades everybody away. He gets fired. They keep Vrabel. They bring in another GM and Rand Carthon. And all of a sudden, then Vrabel gets fired, but they keep Carthon. And Carthon brings in a coach in Brian Callahan that then gets fired for another GM. Like, they're doing the dangerous revolving chair thing that once you do that, there's no stability within the organization. So what I see is a coach that went out last year with a team that didn't have great expectations. The Titans weren't expected to be awesome last year, but they were not expected to be the worst team in football, and they were. And they weren't the worst team in football because of catastrophic injuries. They were the worst team in football because they were the worst. Like, their talent, their coaching, their in-game situation, Will Levis, all of this played into why the Titans lost a boatload of football games. And I'm looking around and saying, to me, this is pretty clear. They're going to draft Cam Ward. And 1 year in, when the Titans suck again, they're going to fire Callahan, and the GM's going to bring in his coach, who's then going to have to figure out the new system for Cam Ward. I feel like you can see it now from a mile away. By year four, Cam Ward will be on his third offensive language that he's had to learn in the league. He hasn't really found a way to flourish in this process. And a quarterback that I think with the right situation around him could turn out to be very, very good. Instead, never gets the weapons, never gets the protection, never gets the coaching, never gets the stability from an ownership group. The Titans are opening a new stadium in a couple of years, and they want to be able to trot out their quarterback as a superstar. And by then, they'll be looking in the draft again because they'll be on their third GM and their fourth head coach and their sixth offensive coordinator, or whatever the hell it's going to be by then. And Cam Ward's going to be sitting around here saying, guys, I didn't suck. You sucked, but you made me suck.
It's hard for me to argue. It really is. Like, yeah, like, I can see all that happening, right? Like, franchises and situations do make quarterbacks a lot of times, and it's tough to sell yourself on the Titans being a good situation for Cam Ward right now. But I think he can overcome it. I really do. I really do trust his talent. I think there's something special about him. And we're going to have this conversation. We're going to have it throughout the year. We'll get together on Sunday nights during the season. I'm sure we'll bring this up often. And you might be right. Maybe the Titans do ruin him, but I think he's the kind of guy. Look, I thought the same about the Texans 2 years ago. And I'm not saying necessarily Cam Ward is CJ Stroud, but sometimes these players are so good that they kind of drag the franchise through, you know, out of the gutter and actually make them somewhat functional as an organization. I think Cam Ward can do that.
Let me say loudly, and I hope if they clip off my Titans conversation, I hope this gets put in there somewhere. I love the city of Nashville. I have a lot of history there. I have nothing but love for what they can be. Like, I want Cam Ward to be wildly successful, and I want the Titans to be an AFC powerhouse because, frankly, it's a great party city. It's a great city. I want great things for Titans fans. I think I want more great things for Titans fans than Amy Adams Strunk does. That's all. Like, I think, like, there are certain teams that are going to be doomed as long as they have that owner and that ownership group. And I think the Titans are one of them. And it's just, unfortunately, they're going to ruin a lot of great players in the process because that's what bad franchises do. They ruin players. And I don't have any proof that that's not going to be where they land. Any hot take on the Giants? By the way, we glossed over the Giants, but third overall pick. Any you feeling some sort of a bold prediction there?
I
mean,
I'm sure they're kind of like, boy, we don't really want to draft Abdul-Carter just because of what their strengths are. Like, they have a million defensive linemen. The only thing the Giants have done well lately is build a defensive line, and here the obvious best player for them is a defensive lineman. Maybe they trade down? I don't think so. I just think they're boring and just take the best player available. Why wouldn't you? Like, you're like, all right, like, we'll figure it out.
If Shadur is there, do they take Shadur at 3?
No way. No, I just think there's been no buzz that way. And I just don't think that's, I don't think that's going to be a great fit in New York. And I think, again, I think the Saints are fine at nine because the opportunity cost at nine isn't that great. Like we've talked about, like the Raiders even at six, be like, Will Johnson really, well, what's it going to be at nine? You're not passing on a Abdul Carter there. Like, so I just think that, I just think the Giants are going to, I wish I had a hot take on the Giants. I don't. I think they had their draft Abdul Carter, probably draft a quarterback somewhere later, but I don't, maybe it's a, that's Milrose landing spot. I don't know. But yeah, I just think, how could you not? How could you pass on Abdul Carter if you're the Giants?
It's amazing to me how different this draft will play out when we're sitting here on night one. If quarterback goes, if two quarterbacks go in the top three, because if you make the argument that Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, Mason Graham, Ashton Jeanty, if you make the argument that all four of those guys, I think, have the opportunity to be stars in this league. Well, if you're everybody else, if you're picking in the top six, man, a reach on a quarterback at two means you're going to get one of those players. No reach on a quarterback at two means you're not going to get one of those players. And it really gets interesting to me after that. You know, that's
what do you think the Patriots do? I think the Patriots are more interesting because if we're being real about this, it's kind of a three-man draft at the top because you're going to have Ward at number one. We all know that. And I just think there's two guys on a separate tier. And I think that's Carter and Hunter, obviously. You get to the Patriots at four and everybody is screaming offensive line. Like, you got to get Drake May some help. But do you pass on Mason Graham? I mean, Vrabel showed during the free agency period, they got a lot of defense. They didn't get a ton of offense. You could tell Vrabel was like, I want defensive guys. So do they go Mason Graham or do they just go the offensive tackle from LSU? What do you think of Patriots? I think they're an easy trade down candidate for me. Why wouldn't you?
100%. I also think, like, go back and listen for anyone that hasn't listened to Football 301. A few weeks ago, Nate Tice had his dad, Mike Tice, come on. And they spent a full episode talking about offensive linemen. And I keep saying this, what really stood out to me, I've listened to probably five or six different podcasts across the media landscape about offensive line, because it's the toughest position to get a handle on. And I've got a group text with some former fat guys. And the interesting thing to me is that it's as much as we talk about how varied everybody is on Shadur, they're equally varied on these offensive linemen. There are guys that, like, some guys love Membu, some guys don't, you know? Some guys think Will Campbell is a can't miss, some guys don't, you know? And it's just, it's so tough. Look, I'm never going to fault a team for sitting right where they are and taking a fat guy. We talk about that all the time. So if you take a lineman, offensive or defensive lineman, with the fourth overall pick, and you're getting your, really, you might be getting your first shot at everybody other than Abdul Carter. You're getting the cream of the crop. Just don't get it wrong. So if I'm the Patriots, who have been so devoid of talent, just don't get it wrong. I stay right where I am, and I take whoever on my board is the highest ranked player there. So it's that simple. But I've seen plenty
Graham.
Of my-
I think it's Mason Graham.
Oh, 100%.
Mason Graham is a plug and play. What are the Patriots going to do at offensive line around Drake May? Like, you're building a defense, and that's awesome, but you got to protect Drake May at some point. Don't want to feed him to the wolves like that. That's not a great strategy in my mind, but I agree with you. If you're just, and Vrabel's a defensive dude, so you're like Milton Williams and Mason Graham up front. Yeah, let's go. Let's get this done.
Frank, think about this. Cam goes one. Let's say Shadur goes in the top three. Well, let's say we're wrong. Shadur goes
got in the top three. Correct, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, Abdul Carter goes in the top three. Now Travis Hunter ends up in New England.
Yeah, snap pick.
I mean, you're running to you're sprinting up and say, yep, we're not even taking a phone call. Like, screw you, don't even call me. Put your phones on do not disturb and just go make the pick. Like,
and you know what? You know who else would do that? The Jaguars at five would do that with Mason Graham. Like, I think that they're praying Mason Graham drops them at five. You talk about one of my favorite, like, team fit with need with player. I think the Jaguars are praying Mason Graham doesn't go to the Patriots right now because they need that. They need a tone setter in the middle of their defense. He would be perfect for them. And I think they would just settle for an offensive lineman at five. Will Johnson. Or I don't know what the Jaguars would do if Mason Graham's off the board there.
As a Raiders fan, I keep hoping one of these teams will simply reach on an offensive lineman in the top five. Because if you tell me Abdul Carter or Mason Graham is there on a defensive line that already has Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins, I'm buying that 10 times out of 10. Like, there's no doubt.
Every time, yeah.
Can I give you one more bold prediction?
Please do. Please do.
We're going to get all the way close to the draft, and the Steelers are going to suddenly realize that the darkness is again setting in, and Aaron Rodgers doesn't really know if he wants to play.
No,
and in fact,
no.
Might not be there for him. And all of a sudden, after all of this sit around and wonder of what's coming next, the Steelers wake up on draft day and realize we don't have a quarterback. And as a result, they're forced to either move up or they're forced to roll the dice that one of the top quarterbacks falls to them. My bold prediction right now as we sit is that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be forced into taking a quarterback in the first round in a year, much like when they drafted Kenny Pickett, that most of us were screaming, don't do it, don't do it. There again, you know, I always say it's better to be lucky than good. In this situation, they're the opposite. It's not just being bad, it's being unlucky. They're going to be stuck needing a quarterback, no one on the open market, nobody that can save them, and they have to draft a quarterback in this year's draft that they're uncomfortable with.
So you think Rodgers just ghosts them before the draft and says, you know what, I don't want to play anymore.
At the very least, I think Rodgers doesn't give them a commitment because he's not sure. At the very least, he's not sure.
That would be so chaotic for the Steelers. It would be, because I think that everybody assumes right now that Rodgers and Steelers is going to happen at some point and we'll move on with our lives, this holding pattern we're in. But if Rodgers was like, guys, I don't really know if I'm going to play. Yeah, you're right. Like, I the Steelers would just be stuck. Like, I don't know that they're necessarily trying to move up 10 Shadur. Spots for Shadur. Like, I don't know.
Shadur is sitting there, man. Like, think about it. If Shadur is sitting there at, like, 13 and he's fallen that far, if Shadur is sitting there at, you know, like, all of a sudden that you're watching the draft board fall and you're like, well, the Raiders didn't take him, the Saints didn't take him, and now you hit that little area where you got Chicago, San Francisco, Dallas, Miami, they're all not taking him. I mean, if you're Pittsburgh picking at 21, are you looking, for example, at that Miami, Indianapolis, Atlanta area and say, man, Shadur's falling. We don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to play. Like,
yeah.
I mean, do you move up? Because the one thing you can't, that's why I keep saying, when we look at these transactions during the offseason at the quarterback position, we have to look at it like, hey, protect your bet, like hedge your bet. Make sure you're not left stuck without any. And you said when we started this whole offseason, somebody would be left in the game of musical chairs without a quarterback.
Cleveland was that team already, but we might have to. We might have to.
But Cleveland could end up with better options than Pittsburgh has.
Yep. You're right. If, like, Aaron Rodgers ghosts them,
wild.
Oh, man. It would just, because they've kind of built their offseason around, okay, we're going to get Aaron. But it's until he commits, you just don't know. As he's a difficult fella, as Ted Tom, a complicated fella was Ted Thompson's old line, the old GM, rest in peace of the Packers. And it's true. Like, when you're dealing with an Aaron Rodgers, like, we don't know. You don't know. You're kind of at the whims of Aaron Rodgers right now. That's not a comfortable place to be. Aaron Rodgers would never be able to go to Pittsburgh if that happened. Like, he'd be the enemy forever if that happened. And I don't even know, like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, part of this delay, is it because Aaron Rodgers wants to see what they do in the draft? What if they do draft Shadur, Jackson Dart? Is he just like, I ain't dealing with this. I don't want to be the mentor for a young guy. I don't care. I only want to play one or two more years. I don't know. Like, when it comes to Aaron Rodgers, we don't know. Like, we can sit here and try to project it and try to think, but we have no idea what Aaron Rodgers is thinking or doing.
Yeah, and that's where one of the most stable organizations in sports suddenly get unstable at the most important position in all of sports. I never thought we'd see that happen. Follow us on social media. I'm also hitting puberty. Congratulations to me. At Yahoo Schwab, at Jason Fitz. It only took, you know, half of most people's lives. I'm almost 50, Frank, and I finally hit puberty. There we
go.
Rate, review, subscribe. Whoa, I'm going to learn how to talk to you. Rate, review, subscribe. If you've listened this far, we particularly appreciate it. And we always appreciate you guys taking the time in general. We're not going anywhere until the draft. We're going to keep coming at you twice a week. We got a lot of exciting things happening, so be sure to keep an eye out on our social medias. There'll be some draft action happening you do not want to miss. We've got it covered from a writing standpoint, from a live stream standpoint. So a lot of second screen options for you that are going to make for a wild, incredible draft weekend. Be sure to hang out with us. Thanks to everybody behind the scenes that works their asses off to make us sound pretty and look pretty. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend, y'all.